Welcome to the Midnight Writers Podcast, helping authors become better writers.
Episode 22, Plot, Characters, and Tension. This is John.
This is Lena.
And this is Ben.
And we have with us once again, Lou J. Berger.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm still here.
Yes. So plot, characters, and tension, which is your favorite to talk about? What's the hardest and the most fun to write?
Oh, I would say they're all tough. Tension, if you know where the story is going, I guess tension's the hardest to keep maintained in your storyline. You know what's going to happen because you're a god and you're writing your story from your viewpoint, which has the beginning, the middle, and the end. I think that all three are vital. And so if you don't have all three done well in the story, it won't move. It won't draw readers in, and it won't entertain. So I would say characters, you have to have a good character, I believe strongly. It's not somebody you necessarily have to like, but you do find yourself rooting for them. Like, if you've seen Dexter, right? You ever saw the show Dexter?
I'm familiar with it.
You have it. All right. Dexter is not somebody you would befriend in real life.
Nope.
But in the course of watching the show, you wanted him to succeed, correct? You didn't want him to get caught. You didn't want him to get stopped. You understood why he was doing what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't seen it, so I won't spoil it for you.
I've heard the premise.
It's like the Walter White Breaking Bad kind of thing. Like,
exactly.
He's doing terrible things, but...
Terrible things. Not somebody you would befriend.
Yeah.
But someone you're rooting for. Mm-hmm. And that's the key. So you have to craft a character that you would root for. Somebody, maybe they're not even nice. It's more fun to root for a bad guy.
Yeah.
It really is. Because, you know, we live our lives within the strictures of society. And, you know, we punch our time card and we pay our rent in time and we do what we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Isn't it fun on a Friday night to go watch the adventures of someone who casts all of those things aside and just does whatever they want? We want them to succeed, but we don't want to be them.
That's why it's so much fun to watch Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
That is a lot of fun.
Yeah. But that's for a lot of reasons.
A lot of reasons. The dialogue is snappy and hammer. And by hammer, I meant my penis. Can I go on the podcast?
That's the first time.
Okay.
On the podcast. So
there you go.
Lou J. Berger. See what happened. Berger. Yes. Sorry.
No, that's okay. So characters are fun. And the more outrageous and consistent you can make them, the more fun they are to write. The plot itself has to move, and that's kind of combined with tension. So tension is, how are you feeling as the reader? Are you on the edge of your seat? If you maintain that, you'll exhaust them and they'll stop. So you have to learn how to balance. There's an old adage out there about writing scenes and then sequels.
Sequels,
yeah.
We've mentioned that earlier.
Okay.
Where the scenes are your character's trying to do something, and the sequel is they're trying to recover
from
taking what they just did and then make a decision for what they're doing next, basically.
And having failed miserably, generally. The tri-fail cycles, we call that. That's the big meaty part of whatever novel you're writing, is the tri-fail cycles. So if you establish up front that there's a goal, that somebody wants to do something, and then you list out the reasons that they can't, and then they tackle those things one at a time and either overcome or do not overcome those individual items. And then eventually at the end, they one last burst of let's do it. And sure enough, it succeeds, and that's the climax. So plot and tension, it's got to move along at a reasonable clip to keep people turning the pages. It's got to build tension, and then you've got to release it. It's like jazz. You ever listen to jazz? Jazz does that. Jazz is adept at building tension and then sometimes releasing it. Sometimes not. They'll just end a song. And then you're like,
pop I've music. I've heard songs like that before.
Pop music always relieves the tension by the end.
Yeah.
Always. That's why it's popular. It's because people read that, or listen to it, and then they feel good at the end of it because they're not left hanging.
It's like a dubstep and you don't drop the bass. Yeah.
It's like, wait still
for
holding it.
Wait for it. Yeah.
We're exactly right. That's exactly right. So I don't have a favorite.
Favorite to write. What's the most fun to write?
Probably the character. The hardest thing to do is maintain the tension, but the most fun to write is the character and have them do or say outrageous things. In real life, I do and say outrageous things.
What?
Yes, I know. It's hard to believe. Oh, good. Thank you. I don't carry you around with me. That was sarcasm. I think it's harder for me, I think, than most people to come up with really outrageous characters. Because they have to be outrageous to me, which makes them over the top for others. Chuck Palahniuk writes outrageous characters.
Mm.
I'd like to meet him one day. I think he and I have a lot in common as far as our mental stability. I did say penis on this podcast.
Twice now. We should have a counter at the bottom of the YouTube. Just, ding.
That would be
How
a good
many
idea.
Times can you squeeze it in?
Oh, can we rephrase that, please?
Sarcasm.
And John has lost it. All right.
And John Moving has tuned on. Out. Okay. Yeah.
John knew when he invited me.
I to be fair, he knows you better, and he should know better.
He did.
I
did.
He put warnings on these ones, yeah.
I think I warned everybody here, too.
He told me once before, he's, you're one of the strangest friends I have. That's what he said. Now that, aww. That's so sweet.
I guess we're not trying hard enough then, Lena.
Inviting you here is an example
I
of...
I don't even compete with this.
Inviting you here onto the podcast, knowing how you are, is an example of tensions.
Building
when,
yeah.
When is it going to happen?
Not if.
There's no way. So,
we have an outrageous character.
Yeah.
Who has no filter.
Yes.
Yeah. Does not recognize sarcasm. Yes, you were going to say.
As a writer, how do you go about building good characters?
Okay, so a good character is somebody who, in their heart of hearts, believe they're doing the right thing. And they have to be true to themselves. And they have to be consistent. If they're not consistent, then they're just a mouthpiece for whatever political ideology you happen to be feeling at the moment that you're writing that. Or whatever message. You don't want your characters to be devalued or devolved into simple message mouthpieces. You don't do that. No, readers can't stand that. They'll throw the book across the room. Anything by Hemingway. So, across the room. As I lay dying. No, that was somebody else. Faulkner. I would say... the character has to believe passionately in what they believe in and to be consistent and to have no fear of putting themselves out there and risking. They have to.
Yeah.
So what about characters who are thrust into situations that they are not prepared for?
That's the best. Because the true metal of the man, and I use man in a generic sense, it has to is manifest only under times of stress. We are all... superheroes when we're sitting on our couch munching popcorn, because literally Superman would sit there and chew popcorn the same way you are. You cannot differentiate. It's when a 747 starts plummeting towards the house that your reaction and Superman's reaction would differentiate. I would become jelly and Superman would stop the 747 in anticipation of that. I would just splat.
So I guess the challenge is then how do you get your passionate characters to show that passion when everything around them is going wrong? They have no choice but to just react to what's happening.
You will have prefaced it earlier on
okay.
by giving a hint as to the things that they find valuable in life.
Okay.
Either a philosophy or a moral code or a behavior pattern, something that you will have demonstrated very slightly earlier on. There's a book I'm reading on screenplay writing called Save the Cat. Mm. You ever heard about Save the Cat? So you want to establish your main character as a good guy early on by having him do something, like save a cat. So the audience instantly says, oh, this is the one I can risk putting my feelings on. This is the one that I can trust to... follow and invest emotionally. And once you've done that, and once you have the reader, they can gut the cat and fry it up over a campfire. But you've already got them, so they're hooked. So now it's like, wait, you've done the horrible thing as a reader. You've invested emotionally in what the author promised was going to be a good person, and now no longer is. And that's when you can start to have some fun.
And you find out the motivation for saving the cat.
Right.
Yes.
Hunger. Yes. I know, right? All right.
So what was the third thing? Plot, character, and...
Tension. So we haven't really covered plot much.
Yeah, so plot.
Plot, okay. So Mike Resnick, who you may have heard of before, I mentioned him in the last one, told me once, he says, what you want to do is, at the very first scene of your story, you want to chase the sheriff up the tree. And once he's in the lower branches, you want to throw rocks at him. Until just before the end. And that's the story. So you throw rocks at your characters, and you put them in increasingly trying positions. You thwart their every intent. You push them to the limit, and then you push them some more. Because one of the things that's true about our readers is they all suffer from Schadenfreude. They all like to watch other people suffer Because when other people are suffering, if you think there's a limited amount of suffering in the world, then they're not. So they feel good. Oh, he's getting thrown rocks at up in that tree. But I'm not, so I'm good.
Yeah.
And they, that's wonderful, because readers really buy into that. And they, the more you can beat your character up without killing him or her, the better it is for the reader.
See, I didn't agree with that for a while, because you need that to a certain extent, but mm-hmm. I like stories where it's not, like, super horrible to the character, where, you know, yeah, bad things happen, he overcomes. And then I was reading Firefight, the Brandon Sanderson's, the second book of the Calamity series, yeah. And that's when it hit me that the characters I get the most invested in, that I'm like, you've got to survive. No, don't let this happen to you, are the ones that more and more and more stuff just keeps going wrong.
It just goes like, wrong. That,
when is he ever going to make it?
Yeah, when's he going to get a break?
But those are the ones you have the most emotion into, because things are going so wrong. And you sit there and see a glimmer of hope that he's going to succeed. And then it gets taken away from him by a horrible author. And like, no, that's going to fail too.
Author, but you're still turning pages.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And those are the page turner ones that you want to see the resolution of.
Yes. So, Amazon pays authors in at least one of its programs based on how many pages were read. They don't necessarily get paid on the sale of the Kindle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the Kindle Select. Those are the ones where if people read it for free using the Kindle Unlimited or the Kindle Borrow.
Right.
And then the author's getting paid on page reads.
Right.
Since the reader isn't actually buying the book.
Right.
Yeah.
I think they'll change that algorithm, because clever scamsters have 30,000 page books where they say on the first page, click this for the table of contents, and I've it goes to page 30,000. And so the counter in the Amazon algorithm says, oh, they read 30,000 pages. Let's give them $3,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that they're going to be authors that do that. They're going to be giving warnings or cutting them off.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard that last month.
It's pretty obvious when that's taking place.
Yeah.
There's no reason to put the table of contents at the end other than for that reason.
Sounds like if they get their comeuppance, it would be a good story.
It would be a good story.
So legitimately, yeah, I actually think that's a decent decent way to pay for a free book that anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I agree.
The more interesting it is, the further the person's going to get, and it makes you want to write
books
that make people want to get to the end.
It is a good reward system to kind of benefit those who are good writers who keep them going. So
I talked to Hugh Howey. He wrote Wool and Dust.
Yeah,
I think he's got a movie coming out, but he can't talk about it. I do follow him on Facebook, so it's interesting to see pictures of him shirtless on some sort of Caribbean blue
desert
water. Yeah, some
living life of a dream on a boat.
Yeah, on a boat. I'm on a boat.
He's like, here's my office today. I'm like, you suck.
Put some shoes on, sir. Yes, he says he puts clothes on for the pictures. Otherwise, he doesn't even wear pants. Anyway, I talked to him.
There's
a
nudity.
Yes. Yeah. I wonder if he shows his. No, I won't say that third time.
Oh, man.
So put it on the thing, 2.5. He almost said it. I asked him at San Antonio. Is that where we were? For WorldCon, I think. I pulled him aside, and I'm like, okay, explain to me how you did this thing with Wool. Because I read the first section. It's only 10,000 words, about 40 pages, and it was an ebook, and it was free. And at the end of that, it ended on a cliffhanger. And so I'm like, okay. That was free. In order for me to read the next part and figure out how to resolve what just happened in my free, I'm going to say that again, mm-hmm. I have to pay 99 cents for another chunk of this frickin' book. So I did. I went ahead and bought the second one, and oh, I got the resolution. Ah, the tension was now relieved, because I was able to see upon reading the second one what happened. But then that clever scribe, that's not a bad word, ended that second component also on a cliffhanger, and it was longer. There were more words. There were more than 10,000 words. There were 20,000 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I got more. For 99 cents, I'm thinking that was a good deal. I got resolution from the cliffhanger from the first part. What do I want to do now? And at the advice of his friends, he had stopped the cash machine, which was parts 1 through 8 individually sold. 1 is free, like you do in 5th grade for drugs. And then 2nd through 8th parts were all 99 cents. But if you add those all together, what is that, 792 something?
Yeah, something
like that. And so he just put an omnibus together, and he had all the rest of the part, and they were $4.99. So it was probably half price.
Actually, he probably makes more off the omnibus than he does in the individuals.
Because of the 70%? Oh, because it's above $2.99. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's probably true. And I said, so where'd you learn to do that? And he said, this isn't the first thing I've written. he said. And so he's been writing for a while. I just never heard of him before Wool. Mm. I don't think most of us have ever heard of him before Wool. And he explained that he learned it from writing for comic books. Mm. That each comic book, from the first cover to the back cover, is a story arc in and of itself. But if you take two comic books that are consecutive in the series, there's usually a story arc between those two. And then three, there's a story arc between the three. Mm-hmm. And by the way, for the whole series, there's an overriding story arc. So he says the trick is to juggle multiple arcs at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you've got one for the serial chapter, and you've got little ones that take two or three to resolve, and of course the one that goes the whole length of the series that never resolves until you decide to kill it off. Mm-hmm. And so I think that what Howie did very well for Wool was to get people continuing to turn the page and to be driven by tension through plot. And he would give you just enough satisfaction through reconciling the story arc for that section, but still leave you wanting more because there's more to be answered.
Yeah, not each section was its own, or each one was its own standalone story, and then it built to the overall larger story.
Right.
So it's not like you were getting more of the same thing. You were actually building onto what
characters were getting deeper, more backstory would be infiltrated. The farther in you get, the more real it becomes. Yeah. Because what can you do in 10,000 words? A short story, a little bit more, a novelette of information, which is nice, but it's only a taste. It's not the full novel's experience.
I tried to do that last year for NaNoWriMo, of having my 50,000 words being individual short stories and just tying together as one larger story.
In the same universe? Kind of a series?
Well, it was one adventure, but each individual part had its own
main character.
Individual section.
Oh, okay.
So our individual, you know, we have to accomplish this. They accomplished that, but the overall huge story hasn't been accomplished yet.
I like it.
So I just never finished editing that.
Break into chunks and give the first one away for free, like we do in fifth grade.
Yeah.
And then sell the others for 99 cents.
Yeah.
That was the plan, but yeah.
Okay.
You got to actually edit things to, you know, before you...
They have to be good, like we said in the last podcast.
You got
to
finish them.
Yeah,
that's the hard part.
The wavelets have to touch that mark.
Yes.
Yes.
So anyway, any last comments for readers?
No, I just... I like the thought of the Schadenfreude being a point of a character where it's like, okay, they're going through hell, but I'm not. So that's interesting to kind of get into the mind of the reader. Hadn't thought of that before.
You ever gone to the grocery store pushing your cart?
Mm-hmm.
You're in the produce section.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody who's talking on their phone slides their cart right in front of yours,
mm-hmm.
doesn't say a word,
mm-hmm.
talking on the phone, ignoring you, not being courteous, not even waving a finger, any finger, not like that, in your direction to say, hey, sorry, because they don't care. They're self-centered. They're narcissistic.
Yeah.
And you take a breath and you go about your business.
Yeah.
But there's a part of you that wants to grab a rutabaga, ripe or unripe. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And hurl it with all force at the back of their pasty head.
Yeah. I was thinking more of a wood chipper, but yeah.
Not many of those in the produce section.
No, not anymore since the
terrible accident of 2012.
Yeah.
So bad. We won't talk about
that. No.
And so your characters are the ones that can do that and not get in too much trouble.
The ones that people want. Yeah. Who cares? You ever read the Jack Reacher series?
Yeah. No, but I saw the movie.
No. Stop. Don't. No.
You should know better.
Yes. Yeah, you as a writer, you should know better. First of all, Tom Cruise is 4'9". Jack Reacher is 6'7", 6'8".
They just put the camera really low. Just
yes, give them stilts, and they hire a lot of very petite women. It went off. So, in the series, Lee Child deliberately writes a hero who is literally unafraid of everybody. He is physically more powerful. He never loses a fight. And you're thinking, well, that's boring. Nope. This is Superman walking around in the world.
Yeah.
And he is devil may care. He doesn't have any compunction about smashing someone to pieces. In the middle of a fight scene, he talks about, I could have killed him with that blow, but I just knocked him out. He'll be walking in circles for a week. And he's matter of fact about it.
Oh,
there's something so satisfying about reading those books, because he'll never get scared. He'll never die.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's powerful and stronger than everybody around him.
Yeah. There's a Japanese series, One Punch Man. It's very much the same thing. He's like, he destroys everyone with one punch. So he's bored at this point because he's so powerful. So yeah, that's interesting.
This one I shall decimate with my pinky.
Yeah, precisely.
Bam. I did it.
It's like, that has been a challenge. So.
But you keep turning the page.
Yeah. No, because it's entertaining.
So even though it's the movie, I like that about the Jack Reacher movie is at the end of it, he's got the bad guy. The bad guy's like, you're not going to kill me. Because, you know, good guys never do in the end. We captured you, you're going to jail, and that's it. And Jack Reacher's like, nope, and he shoots him. It's like, yes, that's what I've always wanted to see.
Yeah, it's like Deadpool, too. He's like, I'm not a hero, bang.
So, readers do respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The more helpless your populace feels in their heart of hearts, the reason that people read is to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And the more helpless they feel in their daily lives, the more they need a hero, the more they need those stories.
Mm-hmm.
If for just a moment to live vicariously through.
I think that's an awesome place to end this podcast.
Right. So you're saying I should stop talking.
Okay. It can only go downhill.
You got one more chance. We can see, do that. Do that ticker again.
All right.
Ding.
We have a winner.
See you next week if you're still with us.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Writers Podcast. If you've enjoyed this content, sign up for our newsletter on our website, midnightwriterssociety.com, where you'll get a lot more great information. See you next Wednesday.